Picture a beggar boarding your Jakarta taxi, not to ask for money, but to help you access the carpool lane. This strange transaction captures something profound. Money isn't just about economics. It lights up the same brain regions as cocaine, triggers ancient survival instincts, and shapes how we connect with strangers. When we anticipate financial gain, our nucleus accumbens fires with excitement. When we fear loss, our amygdala screams danger. Yet we rarely pause to ask, what exactly is this force that governs so much of human life? Long before humans invented currency, life itself was trading. In the Galapagos, wrasse fish clean parasites off sea turtles. Coral polyps swap nutrients with algae. These partnerships aren't modern innovations. They began 3.8 billion years ago when one prokaryote swallowed another that became the mitochondrion, the energy factory inside every cell in your body. That ancient merger created all complex life through exchange, shelter for power. Flowers and bees perfected this dance 100 million years ago. Plants advertise with color and scent, offering sugar-rich nectar while receiving reproductive assistance. Bees transform this nectar into honey, essentially banking energy for winter scarcity. When a bumblebee lands on a flower, an electric exchange occurs. Negatively charged petals attract positively charged insects, facilitating pollen transfer. Energy flows as nature's original currency. Understanding money's journey, from biological exchange to digital abstraction, reveals not just economic history, but the story of human cooperation, creativity, and our endless capacity to create meaning from symbols. Survival of the fittest is often misread as ruthless competition, but Darwin recognized cooperation's power. Social isolation damages health as severely as smoking 12 cigarettes daily. Certain genetic variants, like COMT-VEL, correlate with charitable giving, while oxytocin increases generosity. Like Darwin's finches evolving specialized beaks to reduce competition, humans developed specialized skills that made us interdependent. Those 1.2 million-year-old hand axes weren't just tools. They were status symbols, possibly early currency exchanged by specialist toolmakers for food and shelter. When our ancestors stood upright 1.7 million years ago, freed hands externalized thoughts into objects, enhancing cooperation. Money emerged as the ultimate externalized symbol of exchange. The standard story claims money evolved from barter, but anthropologists have never found a pure barter economy. Debt and credit systems predated coins by thousands of years. Different cultures maintain distinct spheres of exchange, categories where items can only be traded with similar things. We maintain two fundamental spheres: familial, gift economy, and commercial, market economy. A home-cooked meal creates social obligation. A mortgage creates legal obligation. Companies deliberately blur these boundaries through loyalty programs, moving transactions from commercial into trust-based familial territory. Ancient Egyptians discarded brains during mummification as worthless. Today, we know this organ creates and interprets money itself. Traditional economics assumed humans act as perfectly rational calculators, Homo economicus. This model shaped 20th century deregulation and spawned complex financial instruments, yet failed spectacularly to predict the 2008 collapse. Harry Markowitz won a Nobel Prize for calculating optimal investment risk-return balances. When investing his own retirement funds, he abandoned his equations entirely, splitting contributions 50-50 between stocks and bonds to minimize future regret. Studies show only 7% of even affluent investors behave according to rational economic models. Loss aversion explains our irrationality. We feel losses roughly twice as intensely as equivalent gains. Offered a coin toss with $20 downside risk, participants demanded $40 potential upside. This asymmetry drives market volatility. Traders make increasingly desperate bets to avoid realizing losses. We practice mental accounting, treating identical dollars differently based on arbitrary categories. People play the lottery with discretionary funds, but never retirement savings, even though money is fungible. Anticipating money activates our brains more intensely than receiving it, producing neural patterns indistinguishable from someone high on cocaine. In Maori culture, gifts carry hau, spirit yearning to return home, creating natural reciprocity. Japan's elaborate gift economy expresses social debt through on, obligation, and giri, repayment. Some Japanese refuse casual kindness or conceal trips abroad to avoid gift obligations.
86 feet below Manhattan, the Federal Reserve Vault guards 6,700 tons of gold, over $350 billion worth, behind a 90-ton door. Remarkably, none belongs to the Fed. It's held for foreign governments and central banks. This primitive metal's continued protection reveals the fundamental tension between hard money, possessing intrinsic worth like precious metals, and soft money, representing value without inherent worth. Around 2500 BC in Mesopotamia, silver and barley functioned as proto-money. The Kingdom of Lydia birthed Western coinage around 700 BC when rivers yielded electrum, a gold-silver alloy whose inconsistent composition made valuation difficult. By 630 BC, standardized electrum coins bore lion images. King Croesus later introduced pure gold and silver coins with fixed exchange rates, creating bimetallism. Coins transformed Athens by enabling transactions without gift economy's lingering obligations. Solon's reforms made wealth, not just noble birth, qualify citizens for public service. Coinage may have augmented democracy itself. Yet Plato distrusted money as stoking greed, while Aristotle condemned using money to make money as unnatural. Romans demonstrated how authorities manipulate hard money. During the Second Punic War, Rome debased silver coins from 98% to 36% purity. Emperor Nero, facing economic depression and Rome's devastating fire, reduced the denarius's silver content and weight, ancient monetary stimulus. Financial debt emerged around 5000 BC, millennia before coinage. The Code of Hammurabi allowed creditors to seize debtors and their families. Though most nations abolish debt imprisonment, millions worldwide still labor in bondage for ancestors' debts. Warren Buffett finds our bold fascination bizarre. We dig gold out of the ground, melt it down, bury it again, and pay people to guard it, despite its lack of utility. During the 2008 crisis, daily currency trading exploded from $1.5 trillion in the late 1990s to $4 trillion by 2010, dwarfing the stock market's $150 billion average. Soft money emerged for key reasons: convenience, paper beats carrying gold; abstraction, humans developed symbolic thinking; universality, global systems required common currency; and power, issuers could manipulate supply without direct taxation. Paper money originated in China around AD 105, when Tang Dynasty merchants issued paper drafts backed by stored valuables to avoid transporting heavy bronze coins. Kublai Khan declared his currency the only acceptable one, punishing counterfeiters with death. Initially successful, the system collapsed between 1280-1350 when annexing southern Song territories created enormous demand. The state printed more paper but exhausted silver reserves, causing the child to decline 90%. Scottish mathematician John Law proposed state-issued paper currency to rescue bankrupt France. His 1716 Banque Générale quadrupled the money supply within 4 years, initially boosting the economy before collapsing from runaway inflation. Revolutionary War continentals suffered severe depreciation. By 1781, $100 in continentals bought only $1 of hard money. Lincoln authorized greenbacks and established federal monetary control. The classical gold standard era, 1880 to 1914, ended with the Great Depression. The 1944 Bretton Woods Agreement fixed currencies to the U.S. dollar at $35 per ounce of gold, collapsing in the 1960s under pressure from financing the Vietnam War and Great Society programs simultaneously.
Money's future may follow three paths:
A bear case, where crises drive return to hard money, a bull case, where digital transactions become seamless, or a dream case, where boundaries between humans and monetary technology blur. In catastrophic scenarios, we'd likely return to commodity money. During the 2008 crisis, gold prices soared 125% after Lehman Brothers collapse, while U.S. cash circulation increased 45% between 2007-2013. One portfolio manager even hid gold bars under his bed. Bartering resurfaces during severe uncertainty. Yoga studio owner Anne Fife Palmer traded classes for services through Biz Exchange during the 2008 recession, while Spanish computer retailer Sabino Libana paid office rent with printers instead of euros. Yet the true future lies in mobile technology. With 6.8 billion mobile subscriptions globally, entrepreneurs are capturing part of the $900 billion payment industry. In Kenya, M-Pesa allows 17 million people, 60% of adults, to transfer money via SMS. As one Kenyan businessman noted, "I don't need to go to the bank when I have the bank in my phone." The ultimate dream case might involve neural wallets, where thoughts and experiences become tradable currency, resembling the energy currencies of the natural world, where exchange began billions of years ago. In Mother Teresa's home for the dying and destitute in Kolkata, a young Frenchman who could have pursued education and career instead serves the sick and dying. When asked why, he simply replies, "I do as my religion teaches," noting that though materially poor, they are rich in spirit. Our relationship with money follows two logics: economic, more is better, or spiritual, less is more. While modern society operates on accumulating wealth, this pursuit doesn't create contentment. A Gallup survey found only 13% of workers across 200 countries were emotionally invested in their jobs. Jesus' Sermon on the Mount teaches, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven." His message is unequivocal. You cannot serve both God and money. Hebrew scriptures teach enough is enough, finding contentment with what you have. In the Quran, wealth serves as a fitna, or test of faith, revealing one's true heart. Hindu philosophy embraces artha, wealth, as one of life's four aims, balanced with moksha, liberation, recognizing wealth as necessary, yet warning against pursuing it while violating dharma, moral duty. Money's history has shaped societies and determined access to resources. This symbol activates our minds, directs our bodies, and influences our souls. Yet each person interprets it uniquely. The question isn't whether money matters, but what it means to you and how you'll wield its power in service of what truly endures.